Good evening. This is TNT Radio, brought to you by Bloggin' Broadcasting Service, and I'm Nevin Campanella, your net reporter. And today is April the 6th, a glorious day in Paradise, California. And why was it glorious? We had sunshine all day. It did not rain once. Let me tell you, folks, that's a new one for me. Maybe we're finally going to start getting a change in the weather. Sounds like I'm getting ready to break out in song, a change in the weather. A few things to cover before we get into the news. We do have the new TNT Radio Notebook. And you'll be able to access it from the index page of Bloggin Service. I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about it. We spent a lot of time putting this together. And it's not perfect, but it is in development. And one of the hardest things to do was to try to find a way to present the data that I do on the broadcast in some sort of meaningful way, but also separated. It had to be separated. So I developed a set of tables with colors. If I'm doing something in national media, it has a light blue background. If it's a commentary or editorial, it's yellow. If it's from the blogs, it's green. And quotations will always be seen on a white background, and once in a while when I have a guest, it'll be tan orange. And this is all explained at the heading of every broadcast in the TNT Radio Notebook. Also, all links will be in red, and all links are embedded. And by that I mean that when you go in there and you see something and you see a line of red, most likely it is a link to the thing or article or whatever that I'm talking about. Well, food, shelter, and medical care. It is not a privilege, folks. It is your right. You know, I found something today on the net that just absolutely amazed me. There is a website called IraqYouKnow.cf.huffingtonpost.com. What it is a musical, and it's called Iraq the Musical. I would encourage everyone out there to go to it, open the page up, and you're going to be amazed at the song. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And also, I do have it right at the heading of tonight's broadcast on the TNT Radio Notebook. Well, today is April 6th, and what happened in history? Well, actually, some pretty amazing events. Did you know that in 648 BC, on April the 6th, it was the earliest solar eclipse recorded by the ancient Greeks? Isn't that amazing? We see people talking about the eclipse all the time and collecting data on it. Well, in 648 BC, that was the earliest solar eclipse recorded by the ancient Greeks, at least that which we know. I mean, obviously, there could be records elsewhere, but this is the one that we know, and it is the oldest. Also, in 1869, celluloid is patented. Isn't that amazing? I would have never guessed it to be that old. Never, never, never. Rather amazing material when you think about it. And it's used for just about everything. It's a class of compounds, plus dyes and other agents. And it's generally regarded to be what they call the first thermoplastic. You can mold it into just about anything. And it was the very first thing that was used to replace ivory. For instance, some of you may know that originally billiard balls were made of ivory. Now, of course, they're made of celluloid or a hardened plastic. In 1886, Vancouver, British Columbia, was incorporated as a city. So, why do I report that to you? No particular reason. I just really enjoy and love pictures of Vancouver, British Columbia. Anytime they show you a picture, they always seem to be absolutely beautiful. And so that's why I'm reporting it to you. Anyway, now you know. In 1886, on April 6th, Vancouver was incorporated as a city. What else happened on April 6th? Well, here comes something that many of you love. Many of you eat every day. On April 6th, and by the way, this item has a, at least it's been reported, a shelf life of like almost forever. What am I talking about? Hostess Twinkies are invented in 1930. At least that's the date given, the historical date of invention for the Twinkie, April 6th, 1930. And they have been known to have as a shelf life that is like, well, you just can't wear them out. They will last forever. Lord knows what it does in your stomach. Also, in 1930, Will Rogers started broadcasting the Will Rogers program on radio. He was quite a well-known person, and he had many unusual quips. He talked about politics. He was a cowboy. That's what he was. He was a cowboy. And if you check on Wikipedia, when you see him, you're going to see him all dressed up in his, you know, cowboy outfit with a lasso and everything else. He had quite a career. He was born in the Indian Territory in 1839. Wow, that's a long time ago, huh? 1839. Somehow he managed to get into Wild West circuses and so on and so forth, and he actually became involved with the Brothers Circus, and Rogers began to try his roping skill on the American Vaudeville Circuit. Eventually, he worked his way into radio, and actually, I think of all the things that he did, including being in Ziegfeld, in the Ziegfeld comedies. I think he's probably most noted for the radio work that he did. Also, in 1931, on April 6th, Little Orphan Annie debuts on the Blue Network of NBC. And Little Orphan Annie is still popular today. Daddy Warbucks is still bailing her out. And on a sad note, on April 6th, 1998, Tammy Wynette, a wonderful, wonderful American musician, singer, passed away. By the way, she was born in 1942. So, what do we have on the national media today? Let's see, the first one on my list is the United States rolls out a new nuclear plan. Now, I got to tell you, folks, this is very strange. First of all, I don't know who our enemies are that we would need nuclear bombs. But anyway, Bush wants new bombs to replace our aging old ones made during the Cold War. Just what we need, folks, more bombs. Now who the hell are we going to blow up? Why? Why do we keep this insane arsenal? We keep telling everybody else, nope, you can't have nuclear bombs. I mean, isn't that what Iraq was all about? Isn't that what Iran is all about now and all the saber rattling going on? But here comes Bush. He wants to replace our aging old ones made during the Cold War. The Pentagon tells them that they are no longer reliable. Now, my question is, how would they know that? How would they know they're not reliable? Have they been blowing up somewhere? But, you know, people make these kinds of statements, and you kind of accept it as fact. How do they know they're not reliable? The only way you could know that is you tested some, and some either did or did not go off, but that's certainly not being reported. Also, in the news today, bird flu was confirmed in a dead swan in Scotland. This is getting a little spooky, folks. It really is. However, the type of flu has not yet been determined. It's not known if it's H5N1. Keep those letters and numbers in mind. H5N1. That is the avian flu, which, according to scientists, we have no protection. None at all. And every time they find, of course, every time they find a dead bird from the flu, that's certainly the strain that is of suspect. A very interesting discovery was made. A pyramid.
Oh, yeah, it won't be. I mean,
a pyramid was discovered in Mexico. And apparently, it had been sitting on a site of an old Catholic religious site. Now, this particular site was used for portrayal of the crucifixion of Jesus the Christ. And it was, I mean, the pyramid itself was built by the ancient culture. Now, I am not about to attempt to pronounce the name of that culture. I would strangle the word. I'm sure I would. It's amazing to me that we keep finding these things, these pyramids. You know, folks, they're all over the planet. And some of them, I mean, they seem so similar, you know. You have the pyramids in Egypt. You have the pyramids in South America. You got to wonder, was there a basic plan that somehow people around the planet knew? What is it about the pyramids that, you know, you find it all over? And they always seem to have a highly cultural, sometimes almost religious significance. Makes you wonder. What I don't, apparently the people that lived around the area were extremely surprised that all of a sudden there was this pyramid built under this one particular site. Well, also in the news, this one is really weird. And it's the kind of thing that really gets my ire up, okay? The title of it is Jesus Walked on Ice. Now, I don't know why or what the motivation is. And I'm not a religious person and I'm not a Christian, but it seems that there's a professor, a Florida professor, Dornan North. I think that's how you pronounce his last name, N-O-F, North. Now, this guy, he has a title. He has a few credentials. So he's sitting in his office and he thinks up alternative explanations to hand out to the general public. The problem is, he says it as if it were fact. He doesn't have a damn bit of evidence. The only thing that he was relying on by coming to this conclusion, in other words, what he's saying is Jesus didn't walk on water, he walked on ice. And the only reason he's saying it is because he has evidence that during the time of Jesus, it was possible for ice to form on the Sea of Galilee. What a pile of crap. And this jerk is paid by your tax dollars. How does he get away with it? He has a title, and he has credentials. No better than mine. I got a PhD also. I could sit around all day thinking up crap, handing it out the door, and there are just enough dumb people around to swallow it as if it were a fact. Of course, newspapers love this kind of thing. Because it stimulates anger. Yeah, why would they want to stimulate anger? Get people up, they buy more papers, they read more of your stuff. Well, did Jesus walk on water or did he walk on ice? As far as I'm concerned, the University of Florida professor Dornan Knopf has got ice for a brain. Man doesn't have one shred of evidence. Just remember, the people of Florida, if there's anybody out there listening from Florida, you paid this man out of your Florida tax dollars. Now, this next one is totally, totally bizarre. And it's going to take a little bit of explanation, but it was almost funny. First, I'm going to read to you the little story. So Reuters does a story on how the Taiwan government is trying to stop its citizens from using betel nuts because it is harmful, can cause cancer. And they've been trying all kinds of methods of trying to wean citizens off of betel nuts. Also, apparently when you chew betel nuts, it leaves your mouth and your lips blackened. People spit this stuff out onto the ground. It stains everything. And I am told that the betel nut looks something like an olive. Well, why is that so important? Well, it's important in the sense that some government is trying to do something. But the interesting aspect of this story is not people eating betel nuts. The story is printed on a page that has an advertisement by Google. And this is where it gets weird. Somehow, in the magic of the net, when people do a story, there are these automatic advertisements that occur. And the advertisement is supposed to be geared to the issue on the page. So here's the advertisement right from Google. Now remember, this is on a story by Reuters on the betel nut issue. And Google says, and I'm quoting now, "Betel nut sale, new and used betel nut. Check out the deals now, ebay.com. Folks, that's priceless. That is totally priceless. You can't make this shit up. It happened. I read it and I got it in front of me now. And this is what happens when you attempt to automate everything on the net. You can't do it. At some point, you actually have to have a human step in. So now, according to this advertisement, there is betel nut on sale, new and used. Can you imagine a used betel nut? I don't know what that means. Somebody had a mouthful, spit it out, and now you're reselling it on eBay. Very, very strange. Google has got to get its act together with some of these advertisements. The next one is a mystery, an absolute mystery. 121 human skulls were found wrapped in plastic bags in western China. And police have no idea as to how or why. All of a sudden, a farmer is digging around his field, and he digs up 121 human skulls wrapped in plastic bags, so you know it's not like ancient. We're talking at least as recently as whenever plastic bags came out. Who knows? Maybe Jason is roaming the hills of western China. Be careful, folks. You know, it's getting very strange out there. Also, you should know that the article itself said that it didn't look surgical. I mean, these heads were literally whacked off. Next one. This is the kind of editorial in the New York Times I just love, because the people writing the editorials have the IQ of about a carrot. Are you ready for this? Okay, here's the editorial. This was published today, April 6th, and it's titled "Resolving." Listen to this, folks. "Resolving the Wiretap Debate." What debate? There's no damn debate. There's no debate about it. George W. Bush broke the law. Let me read what this person, this editor of the New York Times says. Quote, I'm quoting directly out of the New York Times. Quote, Congress seems to lack the backbone to stop President Bush from authorizing wiretaps without court orders, and censuring him would probably not do much to make him follow the law. What could make a real difference would be a Supreme Court ruling that found his domestic surveillance program to be illegal. A recently introduced bill would provide a good way to resolve the matter, putting the National Security Agency's secret spying program on a fast track to Supreme Court review. Under the bill, which was introduced by Senator Charles Schumer, the New York Democrat, people who suspect that they are being subjected to warrantless electronic surveillance could challenge the spying in court. The bill would give people like academics and journalists who communicate regularly with people in places like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan standing to sue if they are refraining from communicating out of fear that the government is illegally listening. Doesn't that sound good? Bullshit. What? You know, folks, that's not how you solve a problem. That is totally bizarre. This New York Times editor has got his head jammed you know where. That's a hell of a way to solve a problem. Instead of impeaching Bush for breaking the law, what he's advocating is we should make more laws that are intended to put the problem on the shoulders of the victim. How absurd can you get? And an editor of the New York Times thinks this is a good idea? What the hell are they smoking at the Times? You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this one out. The answer is remove the Congress that refuses to do something about the problem. How bizarre. How totally bizarre. And to think that we have people who are now going to support in a passive manner, believe me, this is support. They're going to support in a passive manner Bush breaking the law because they're not going to confront the issue. Instead, they're going to pass laws to try to deal with the issue around Bush breaking the law. I'm telling you, folks, our country is getting really weird. And the editors at the New York Times need, you know what they need to do? I'll tell you how they solved their logic problem. They go into the bathroom, they kneel down in front of the toilet, they stick their head in the toilet and keep flushing until rational thought comes back. How bizarre. Okay, off of the national media. This comes from the blog Anything They Say. And the title of it is called The Face of Diplomacy. Now, what I'm looking at, folks, is a picture of Condoleezza Rice. Let me quote from the blog now. Readers will know that I have been rather critical of Condoleezza Rice and her various diplomatic travails. Except for one brief, shining moment, she has generally appeared to be singularly unsuited to the task as America's face forward in the international community. Tone deaf in a world of subtle sounds. Well, check out that face. Now, folks, they're talking about the picture. You got to see this. Scowling, argumentative, and just plain angry. It perfectly bespeaks the Bush administration's view and stance within the larger world. I'm not entirely sure where or when this picture was taken. By all appearance, it may have been from the congressional hearing today. But what I find interesting is that this was a photograph chosen by BBC to pictorialize Rice's position on the India nuclear argument. Whoa. If that's how BBC is viewing her, let me tell you, folks, the picture really is worth 1,000 words. When you see this picture, you're looking at one mad lady. I mean, her face is all scrunched up. I mean, she looks like fire coming out of her eyes, just plain anger. What does it mean? I don't have a clue, but it's kind of scary. This is one of our leaders. Next on the list, this comes from a blog simply known as ACS. And it's posted by Vanessa. And what it is, it's a news roundup. It's a news roundup of over the past couple days. Hold on, folks. I got a light of smoke here. Lawmakers overwhelmingly approved a bill yesterday that would make Massachusetts the first state to require that all of its citizens have some form of health care. If the bill proceeds as planned, poor people will be offered free or heavily subsidized coverage. Those who can afford insurance but refuse to get it will face increasing tax penalties until they obtain coverage, and those already insured will see a modest drop in their premiums. Well, there's more to the story than that. First of all, it's not ever increasing tax penalties. It's a flat penalty per year of $1,000. I know that. I've read the material on it. And there will be a modest drop in premiums. The other thing that it fails to mention is it will cost business and industry $295 per person per year. And also what's not being stated is, where is the money going to come from for all this? Well, the money's going to come from what's called federal reimbursement. I don't remember exactly when that started. We were talking about maybe 20, 25 years back when federal reimbursement was initiated. And literally what that means is part of the tax money that the federal government receives literally goes out in blocks to different states. I do not know how it's decided how much each state gets, but each state does get a block of money from the U.S. Treasury. Next, demonstrators in France block roads, rail lines, and mail delivery trucks today in a second straight day of protests to demand the repeal of a divisive jobs law. While unions vowed they would not compromise in talks with President Jacques Chirac's ruling party on the issue, the marches drew over 1 million protesters. Boy, that's a lot of protesting. Unfortunately, I do not know enough about that particular blurb to tell you what the policies are that are divisive in terms of the job laws. I have no idea. In the college town of Athens, Georgia, home of the University of Georgia, a woman who was cited a $100 ticket for a questionably offensive bumper sticker has had her case thrown out. The bumper, which read, "I'm tired of all the Bush," and then it has --, end quote, was determined not to be worthy of prosecution because the state's Lewis decal law was ruled unconstitutional in 1900. Well, I'm going to finish that statement for you. In other words, on the bumper sticker, it says, "I'm tired of all the Bush --, end quote. Well, what you would fill in is, "I'm tired of all the Bush shit." That's what it amounts to, folks. No biggie. No biggie at all. Last week, juror Wayne Smith from Ogallala County, Florida, sued the county because its courthouse is inaccessible. Smith, a wheelchair user, said he had to park in a distant parking lot because the juror's lot had no ramp access to the courthouse annex. He also described having to maneuver opposing 90-degree turns to get to the jury box. He had to be helped up the steps and into the box as many as 9 times a day for 5 days, and he sometimes had to back out of the courtroom. You know what, folks? I know this sounds good to you, to some of you, because here you have a person in a wheelchair who apparently has to literally go through contortions to try to get into the courtroom. and he wants to fulfill his civic duty. I can understand that somewhat. Why didn't he just say, I can't get into the courthouse, therefore take me off the jury list? Does it make any sense? What is he doing? He's suing the county because its courthouse is inaccessible. But he didn't have, he wasn't forced into it. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't have a right to sue. I agree, he has the right. But what kind of logic is going on our planet? Why do we keep producing these lawsuits? Why? So we can make more things accessible for people in wheelchairs? You know, if that were true, then he never would have encountered a problem to begin with. All these lawsuits have been going on for a long time. If he was really, really upset, he would have just begged off the jury. I'm sure some of you have a different opinion. Phoebe Connolly from In These Times examines a slight catch in Walmart's policy to now cover, boy, I don't know what this means, to now cover emergency contraception. I have no idea what that means. It still does not require pharmacists to dispense it. I would like somebody to define for me emergency contraception. What? How does that become an emergency? Got me on that one, folks. This is from Amnesty USA. I may not read the whole thing, but I'm sure going to read part of it. This is from the Secretary General of the Council of Europe. And as many of you are aware, there was a decision made in terms of one of the terrorists. I'll try to pronounce his name, Mustoyu. The Council of Europe responded to yesterday's decision to consider Zacharias, the so-called 20th hijacker from 9/11, for the death penalty. He was in custody at the time of the hijacking. The Secretary General of the Council of Europe had the following things to say. Quote, the obsession with the death penalty as the only way to give justice to the victims of terrorism is as sad as it is wrong, end quote. You know, I guess one of these evenings we probably should have people come on the air and do their presentation, those for and against capital punishment. You know, my problem, I would do it, but my problem is I am so against it, I'd have a hard time putting a person on who was for it because I see it as not only wrong, I see it as one of the greater evils of our society. It'd be very hard for me to do it. Extremely, extremely difficult. Am I saying to you I don't believe in capital punishment? Absolutely, I don't believe in it. I told you at the beginning of the program, I'm not a religious person. I'm not a Christian. What I don't understand about capital punishment is how any Christian could be for it, simply because it says in the Christian Bible, thou shalt not kill. And it doesn't equivocate. It doesn't say thou shalt not kill unless. No, there's no equivocation. Thou shalt not kill, period, the end. Which part of that don't people understand? I'm not a Christian, and I understand it real well. You do not honor the memory of the victims by spilling more blood. Moreover, in the context of the fight against terrorism, the death penalty is not only wrong, it is counterproductive. A trial which offers a platform to the ramblings of a delusional extremist and by gratifying him with the instant status of martyrdom in the eyes of his fellow fanatics is missing an opportunity. And I was going to add a missing the point that's there in my notes. Folks, how stupid can you get? These terrorists blow themselves up. This is what they do. In their mind, in their own mind, they see themselves as being heroes, and once they blow themselves up, they have an opportunity to achieve a high status in heaven with their God. So how do we punish those who are about to do this? We execute them, giving them the very thing they tried to do to begin with, kill themselves. Does this make any sense to anyone? Certainly not to me. blog. I can't, there's nothing really here to read. The next blog is called Blog of Stupidity. And folks, you have got to see these pictures. It is unreal. I'll try to describe them. There's two pictures. In the very first one, I'm sure some of you have been on interstates where you had tolls to pay. You know, you stop at a little toll booth and you toss a quarter in or 50 cents or whatever it is now. Well, this is a picture of the toll booth. There are two cars side by side squeezed into a space in which only one and partially of another car could get into. Some turkey, for whatever reason, drove up the side of the other car that was at the toll booth and tried to jam his car through the space, and of course, he got quite stuck. Absolutely bizarre. However, as odd as that picture is, if I had a vote for which picture wins the Stupidity Award, it's got to be the next one. And by the way, the next one is titled, Not My Job. Now, what is it of? It's simply a picture of a road going through, it looks like a country road. It's straight as an arrow. And it's obvious that the public service crews came by to paint the yellow stripes. They did an excellent job. I mean, it's straight as an arrow. However, right smack in the middle of where they painted, is a roadkill. Yeah, I mean, this is unreal. I can't quite figure out what the animal is, but they paint it right over the top of it. Didn't bat an eye. They just kept that paint going, and I think it's a possum. And they just, the yellow stripe goes across the top of his head and down the backside, and they just continued on. I guess there wasn't anybody on the truck that could say, well, my job is to pick up the roadkill before we paint. You know, if there had been a rock there, someone in the truck would have gone out and taken the rock off the road, but they did not. They did not remove this roadkill. I've got to vote that the winner of Blog of Stupidity. Next blog. This blog is a little bit of a hard one. I don't always go into it. Sometimes it's more than I can handle. It's called Bombs and Shields. I'll read it straight to you, folks. It's not easy to handle. More than 1,000 ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews flooded the streets of their Borough Park neighborhood in a spontaneous demonstration against police brutality and harassment. Around 6:30 p.m., residents began pushing and shoving police following the arrest of 75-year-old Arthur Sheck, who police say was talking on a cell phone while stopped at a traffic light. According to some eyewitnesses, the elderly man, who is hard of hearing, was roughed up by police after he failed to provide them with identification when they asked for it. The police say that Sheck was argumentative and threw himself on the ground. Two men who tried to intervene in the arrest were arrested themselves, including one who allegedly jumped on the back of an officer. Residents shouted, "No justice, no peace," in Nazi Germany as they smashed the windows of a police cruiser and set another one on fire. Rioters built numerous bonfires in the street, which they held for about 4 hours until riot police were able to gain control of the situation. Two officers suffered minor injuries, but no one was arrested after the initial incident. Borough Park residents acted in a similar but less confrontational manner in August of 1999 following the shooting of an emotionally disturbed man, Gideon Bush, who was brandishing a hammer at police. Anyway, folks, riots always start for a reason. They don't just fall out of the sky. And this was simply the stupidity of the police. Here you've got an... This riot should never have happened. Never. I mean, you got a 75-year-old man, and you have police who are hassling a 75-year-old man who does not hear very well. You can tell that as soon as you talk to an individual. Unless the cops in Brooklyn, New York are really stupid, which I'm suspecting some of them really are, to create this kind of problem. They didn't have to harass a 75-year-old man because he was talking on a cell phone while stopped at a traffic light. These cops have got nothing better to do. What should happen to them? Fire them. They are not performing their job. It's real simple. Fire them. Get some police who know what they're doing. This is for all. Oh. This is from Anything They Say. I hope I have time. I've got about 4 minutes left. This is on Paris Hilton. And I wrote a piece about this a few days ago. I was trying to find it, and I couldn't find it in my notes. Anyway, let me give you the sum total of this. And then I'm going to shock you a little bit. See, we come to find out that Paris Hilton, now you know who she is, a wealthy, rich girl, okay? Who's got too much time on her hands, too much money, and is a little bit like a dingbat. Now, an Indian director, T. Rajvanath, is pursuing Paris Hilton for the role of Mother Teresa. Now, when I first heard this, I was a little bit in shock. You know what Paris Hilton is known for? You don't know, do you? For making home movies, home video, porno movies with her boyfriend and sending them out on the market. I mean, that's what she got involved in. I don't think she ever sold them, but she just distributed them. Now, I'm reading this again on Anything They Say, the blog. And at first, when I read it, I was a little bit stunned by the approach. Let me start. Far too many people seem shocked, horrified, that Paris Hilton is being pursued by Indian director for the role of Mother Teresa. And the reason I didn't pronounce this name is I didn't want to twist it again. The horror apparently stems from the notion that a callow, rich, but otherwise worthless twit will be called upon to portray a fanatic, a fundamentalist, and a fraud. Whoa! A fanatic, a fundamentalist, and a fraud. They're referring to Mother Teresa. You're right. These are the words of Christopher Hitchens, words describing Mother Teresa. Now, the person who's writing the blog then goes on to say, I'm not sure why this should be so shocking. What is shocking is how many people have bought the Vatican propaganda about Mother Teresa. Although apart from Hitchens, there has been very little in the media that would dissuade the public from the Catholics' trope that Mother Teresa is anything but the saint they wish everyone believed her to be. Well, folks, I have no evidence at all that Mother Teresa was anything but what she appeared to be. Hitchens, now he wrote a book, and there's a link here in my notes. You'll get to his book at Amazon.com. Hitchens' expose of Mother Teresa revealed some scandalous behavior, and none of it was ever much acknowledged by, well, almost everyone. But Hitchens offers some harsh words for the medieval-minded Albanian nun. Now I'm going to quote Hitchens. Quote, Mother Teresa was not a friend of the poor. She was a friend of poverty. She said that suffering was a gift from God. She spent her life opposing the only cure for poverty, which is the empowerment of women and the emancipation of them from a livestock version of compulsory reproduction. And she was a friend to the worst of the rich, taking misappropriated money from the atrocious Duvalier family in Haiti. Well, I know what family that is, folks. If that's true, that's pretty low. Whose rule she praised in return. and from Charles Keating of the Lincoln Saving and Loan. Where did that money and all the other donations go? The Primitive Hospice in Calcutta was as run down when she died as it always had been. She preferred California clinics when she got sick herself, and her order always refused to publish any audit, end quote. Whoa! You know, now look, folks, I am not saying that this is true. I'm simply reading to you what Hitchens is reporting. And if it is true, with this book coming out, believe me, the people on the net will dig, and they will dig deep. It will eventually come out. You know, folks, I never get to finish my report. I love you all. Godspeed.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.